could use a few pounds. Tight pants, points, hollering out. She was a black-haired beauty with big dark eyes and points all her own, sitting way up high.
Welcome back in. Matt Bubala here with you, Radio 720 WGN. Very excited to welcome back our good friend, Tribune film critic, Michael Phillips. Hey, Michael, how are you?
Good, Matt. How are you doing?
I'm good. You got a little pep in your voice because people are going back to the theater. There's there's some excitement in the air, I feel, for the first time in a long time.
There is. I think, you know, a lot of it is actually just around certain movies. I mean, I saw In the Heights, and I thought, yeah, that film is if you're going to get a film, it might actually entice people back into the theaters once it's safe. And now here we are in phase five. You know, this could be the one. And Matt, I mean, I've seen it once. It's really good. And the four of us are going to go back out and see it as for me another time, first time for them at the Music Box. I'm eager to see it with a crowd.
Yeah, I can imagine. And it is exciting. I just took my kids to see A Quiet Place 2 earlier this week. It was our first time back in the theater. And it was spaced. I mean, it was a midday show. We went early in the day. There were only like 10 other people in the theater. It was great. And it was really interesting to me because, you know, I love getting there early, getting the previews and all that stuff, seeing what else is coming up. And, of course, In the Heights was a big one. But the most interesting preview to me was Cinemark, which is where we were a couple of times while we were there during the previews, ran a commercial where they have just like a telephone-sized screen on the big screen. And, you know, went on about, if this is how you're watching it, look what you're missing. And then it gets real big, and they're trying to tell people,
I like it.
You got to come back. You got to come back. This is where it's really at. And that's going to be the big thing, is now that HBO Max streamed all this stuff and we could order it easier, and how are these alliances going to keep up? What do you think, Michael? Are we going to get back to a series of, nope, it's in the theater only? Well, was that just...
Matt, I don't want to go to another sentence without pointing out the massive hypocrisy of the studios who have changed their whole business model to accommodate streaming. And, you know, if they weren't mobbed up already with a streaming platform, we're really, really making sure they accelerate that move. And there you go. Something like In the Heights, just like so many movies to come, is going to be available simultaneously on, is in fact available simultaneously on HBO Max. Same time, same day as it premieres in theaters. And that is self-competing. It's really hanging the movie theaters out to dry, I think. And look, I'm sympathetic to everybody who's been trying to stay alive, really, and make a buck or break even in this pandemic.
Yeah.
And viewing habits have changed big time, but I am not personally, as a moviegoer, as a civilian, and as a critic, I'm not ready to let the big screen experience go. I'm not. It's something like In the Heights. I can't wait to see how that plays with the crowd.
And
a big crowd, big screen.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people feel the same way. Even if you don't have the big crowd, seeing something majestic on the screen, whether it's an action movie or just a sweeping, beautiful, you know, piece of cinematography, is different on a big screen. No matter how big our screens get at home, it's not that big. It's not the exact same, the sound and everything. There's a feeling of going out to the movie, so we all want to re-embrace that. Are you surprised that, you know, I get why they did it. Well, HBO Max was looking for subscribers, so they maybe tilted it a little far. But I get why, when the theaters were shut down and you have this product and you're trying to figure out a way to make it profitable or make money other than letting it sit on the shelf for a year, that you would do something. But you would think that now that theaters are reopening, and that's where the studios really make their money, right? I mean, I guess they look at how many subscriptions Netflix has and how they're making money hand over fist. And they say, hey, this is what we all want to do, which means that none of them are going to make nearly as much money anymore. But you know, a Marvel movie in the theater that makes $1 billion, you're not doing that on the small screen. You're not. It's impossible to make that money, right?
Right, exactly. And there's a lot of pressure, I'm sure, internally from discussions with Marvel and Disney, because it's all the same, you know, all the same kind of corporate entity now. You know, what's the ramifications of premiering Black Widow simultaneously on Disney Plus in the theaters? I'm not even sure what the release strategy is for that particular one. But you know, Quiet Place 2, good old John Krasinski, just, you know, I think among other people, said, well, look, I want this thing in theaters first. I don't want it to compete with the streaming release, and it made it a little bit special. And, you know, and look, times change. It's not going to be 2 months, 3 months time gap between a film's theater release and its streaming release. It, well, those days are gone. But I like making it a little special on the screen for a day. I'd like to point out one other thing, too, with going back to the movies in what is now, in Chicago, a no-capacity circumstance, okay? That's not really the case. There's not a single movie theater that I know of in this city that is actually got all the restrictions lifted. It just isn't working that way. You, even with the largest chain in the country, AMC Theaters, you go online, buy a ticket to so-and-so, whatever you want, AMC Theaters for tomorrow night, you buy that ticket, and automatically the seat to your left and the seat to your right is blocked. So they're really only selling, you know, at most 33, 40% capacity in every single theater they have. It is, yeah. We are not there yet. We don't know if the business is coming back, and the theater owners and operators just aren't, they're not selling every seat. It's not there yet. We'll see how it comes, I don't know, by Labor Day maybe. That's what I'm hearing some people are saying. Like, we'll see if the business is there and the safety and the numbers for COVID are there and there's no resurgence and no variants to worry about. Then we'll get back to full capacity. But this idea that it's everything goes back to full capacity immediately, not really the way it's playing out.
I know you and I talked about this probably around 6 months ago about whether some of the chains are going to survive. It appears that they have. Is that because overseas did better than we did here in the U.S. during all of this?
That's a good question. It did, and it's also a matter of, you know, yes, they did better with the, they did better with the pandemic management. I think it's still some worry and some speculation about whether or not the fact that AMC has this insane market value right now, which is all kind of propped up by Reddit memes, and I don't know how much solidity there is there truly. I think a chain like AMC will, even if they're acquiring other people's theaters, like they're talking about picking up a lot of the ArcLight theaters that are closed, they'll pick up some. I think a lot of it'll shrink, though. I do. I also don't think that's such a tragedy if it shrinks enough to sustain itself. I don't know if a 12 screen or a 18 screen at every mall again belongs to this time and place anymore. You can't get too stubborn about economic survival, but. What I like about living in Chicago or anywhere near it, Matt, is that, you know, you every kind of movie experience just about is still going to be yours, at least for a few more years. I can go to the Music Box Theater in Lakeview, 750-seat, 1929 theater with a huge screen, and that thing is not going anywhere. Business is good. It's coming back, you know, gradually by management sort of decree. Like, we're not lifting all the restrictions, but... Look, if I can see a Taiwanese movie at 4:30 on a Monday earlier this week, Goodbye Dragon Inn, a film nobody knows, essentially, and 150 people showed up, something is still in the air and in the water about going out to the movies.
Well, there's certainly a pent-up demand. We're speaking with Michael Phillips, Tribune movie critic. You can find him at chicagotribune.com. More next on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN, chatting with Chicago Tribune movie critic Michael Phillips. So we talked a little bit about the business. Let's talk about, and like you're saying, you're seeing this film nobody would have heard of except for Michael Phillips on a Monday afternoon, but there's another 150 people there. There is pent-up demand. People do want to get out and start seeing some movies. So let's get back to doing what we do, Michael. Let's talk about what is out there to see. I mentioned A Quiet Place Part 2. I thought it was, I really enjoyed it. Now, maybe I've just been away from the theater for too long, but what did you think about that movie?
You know, I ended up not writing about that just because of the how it fell with the deadlines and other work, but, you know, pretty effective. I mean, it's very much like the first one. And I think people were, you know, really, they did turn out for it in pretty good numbers. And, you know, I think he's, Krasinski is a fairly effective actor. And in the space of two movies, he's turned into a better director than he is an actor. as much as I enjoyed him on The Office and some other stuff. But, you know, I really do think he's a true filmmaker. I don't know if that's the freshest movie I've ever seen, you know,
sure.
But the premise is simple, totally effective.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love it that you punished your children with all that really queasy suspense, you know, for a couple hours. That's great.
Well, my son Tommy did have his face in a shirt for most of it, but that's okay. That's how Tommy rolls with that. So I'm fine with that. Although my only problem with the film, Michael, is nobody can go through all this and look as good as Emily Blunt does. Like, they beat up her feet, but she still looks so magnificent. I'm like, you don't look like you're struggling enough to really be going through this. Carrying a baby around, but boy, look at me. I'm gorgeous.
Okay, I did. I there was a moment where I thought, all right, now you're messing with me just a little too far. the idea that the newborn baby has to spend part of the time in this movie, and in one particular scene, screaming, you know, the baby's screaming his lungs out. Is it a he or a she? I don't even know that.
I'm not even sure. I don't even know.
Okay.
I don't even know if it's revealed, actually.
Well, I think in the spinoff, we'll find out more about this baby. But, you know, but you know, that baby's like, you know, crying. They have to keep it completely silent, and they shove it in a suitcase, and then, you know, they put an, you know, oxygen thing in there with it. The baby's like basically running out of oxygen. That's a certain kind of suspense premise that I think, you know, guys, back off. You know, just quit. You know, quit it. You know? So. Yeah, you know, is it effective? Yeah, you don't want to see the baby, like, you know, asphyxiate. But I thought this is a bridge too far, I thought. A bridge too far.
Very, very interesting. I feel like they really left it set up for part three. But I don't blame them. You know, if you're gonna make money and be back there, let's do it.
Wide open. And, I mean, honestly, there's a couple of movies coming up that are going to be the test cases. And you can read about this in the Tribune. In the latest column by, I guess, Michael Phillips wrote it.
Oh, okay.
And the, you know, the first one is In the Heights. Are people going to go to this good time, basically family-friendly musical? Got a PG-13 rating, but it barely deserved it.
Sure.
And it didn't, in fact. You know, are people going to go given the option that they could stay at home same day and watch it? That's test one. Test two is the action crowd going to turn out for Fast and Furious 9? Later in June. It's already been a hit overseas. It's got a release pattern that's, you know, making kind of the U.S., you know, I don't know, the 15th country it's going to play. But, you know, that's a proven formula, and people do turn out for those movies. And are we back enough? Are people feeling safe enough? Are they vaccinated enough to go out and see that movie? Which is, look, whatever one thinks of these movies, some of them are a lot of fun. They're big screen experiences. And so those are the two test cases. And I think, Matt, if those two succeed, if they really entice audiences back, then we may get through to the other side of this pandemic, and movie going as we know it in 2021 may well be on its way back.
It's really interesting because back early on, Michael, when we weren't really sure, they released Tenet. And that probably wasn't the right movie to try to see if people will come back to the theater, because that was going to struggle in some sense, no matter what, right? And In the Heights, while I'm very excited, and I loved Hamilton, and you hear kind of that, if you don't know the play, and I don't know the musical already, so I'm coming at it brand new, but here in the trailer, I feel kind of that Hamilton rhythm, and I'm getting excited about it. It looks incredibly well shot and choreographed, but is that a big crowd, like, is that going to get, it's not Iron Man, right? It's not one of those, it's not Black Widow, and even those, so until one of those come out, one of those that would have done $1 billion, it feels like,
right.
I feel like we won't truly know until one of those comes and shows us what's going to happen.
And I think the first one we'll get along that line is Fast and Furious 9, which is, you know, not quite a Marvel-sized movie, but it's, you know, it's got outlandish stunts, and you know it's got what it's got, and people have been paying for it for eight movies, so you know, why not the ninth? But that's the next test. I think In the Heights, certain kind of test. It's also the first of nine movie musicals we're going to get this year alone. It's amazing.
Seriously?
You can go many years between like a musical you remember, and then suddenly you got nine, so we'll see. Hope it's off to a good start. I really do.
Is that a Hamilton effect that's finally catching up now, that Hamilton was such a hit on Broadway that and that, you know, they knew that eventually be made into a movie, or once they greenlit In the Heights, that they started saying musicals are going to come back, let's start making musicals?
Maybe so. Hamilton is a once-in-a-generation success, just in terms of its size and its reach, and And the fact that, it, you know, the performance capture version where they just filmed kind of an optimum version of the Broadway production with the original cast, the fact that that was so satisfying as an experience, a streaming experience on Disney Plus last summer, basically saved last summer's movie yeah. going in a way. And now here we go with In the Heights, which is a real full-on adaptation, you know, not tied to the stage version so much. It makes a lot of changes from the stage version, but, you know, is it as kind of momentous as Hamilton? No, it's a much more modest show, and it's really just Lin-Manuel Miranda writing about semi-autobiographical, you know, kind of impressions of his of the neighborhood near where he grew up. This is Upper Manhattan's Washington Heights neighborhood, which is this great pan-Latino, you know, amalgam of, you know, Dominican, Puerto Rican, Mexican, Cuban, wonderful characters. And, you know, you're either going to like the score or you're not. And that's what you hear. When you hear the score, you do hear that sort of hip-hop use of you know, how to push a song along and a story along with that kind of real hip-hop and slam poetry energy. And I went for it. I mean, it's not, I don't know if it's a classic, but it sure as hell worked for me.
We're speaking with Michael Phillips, Chicago Tribune movie critic. When we come back, I want to ask a little more, what else are we looking forward to? Is there a Bond film coming out? What else has been on the shelf that Michael can't wait to see? And what about the movie he saw earlier this week? What about the art films? Are those back in a great way? And will there be a glut of what we're going to see coming up because of all the time down? Like, how is that going to shift out? Or did we not release anything, so we're all good? We're ready to play catch up. We'll find out all of that after we take a quick look at the News Nation News here on 720 WGN. Happy Bala back with our friend Michael Phillips from your Chicago Tribune. Go to chicagotribune.com, of course, and read about the films that Michael Phillips is covering. Michael, I want to ask you, though, because a lot of the last year, you've been covering stuff that was streaming. And like in your, yeah, I remember when you and I talked about your top films of the last year, a lot of it was, you know, there was sort of this blend now, right? Because what is a film then and what is like a documentary series and like things sort of like, I don't know, definitions I feel like sort of shifted. So how do you see your role now? Will it be back just I'm in theaters, I'm in the screening rooms, I'm doing this? Or do you think these direct to Netflix, direct to Amazon things that are just going to become more and more prevalent, do you think that becomes something you have to talk about more?
It's, you know, I don't know if it's any different than the way people talk about movies and TV shows and streaming limited series, you know, streaming options. It's all become a bit, you know, a bit fluid, and yeah, that's in a way that's kind of the wonderful reminder there. Honestly, is that, you know, that visual narrative storytelling doesn't need to stick to one definition. I mean, people used to say, let's go out to a movie. I think we're going to have a generation now that's going to shift slowly to, you know, less folks retaining the movie going habit, and it's become a movie staying habit. That's all right. I mean, I it makes me sad personally, but I think, and I think if it shrinks a bit in terms of the footprint about how many millions and billions buy tickets in an old-fashioned movie-going experience, you know, that'll shrink over time. But again, I think it's inevitable. I don't think it's going away. I think small towns in the U.S. that used to have one screen or one multiplex out at the mall, if that close, you know, when they close, I don't know if they're ever going to get anything back. And this is where I do feel sad for a lot of young moviegoers who will not develop the habit. As I say, in Chicago, I don't think we have as much to worry about there. But that's how I feel about that.
What about what you see as the type of film coming out? You mentioned that you saw this Korean film earlier this week, but I wonder if where the studios are at financially, if they're going to be just greenlighting for now things that they think are franchises or are going to give a big return instead of saying, hey, I love this arty flick. It won't make us any money, but it'll get us some press, get us maybe some nominations. Will we lose out on some of the artistic stuff because they're not going to fund that right now while they're trying to recoup
money?
I do
worry about that. But, you know, okay, so like the Bond film, for example, that, you know, that was, of course, you know, made for the theaters. It was supposed to come out before the pandemic. And now it's, you know, it keeps getting kicked back. And I think right now there's a pretty good chance that it's going to premiere simultaneously on a streaming platform with theaters, which again, like other films, you know, like that, but they just sort of cry out for a big screen. I think, studios are just being craven and kind of, you know, competing against themselves a little bit, and also hanging the movie theater operators out to dry. So, you know, I don't love that. I don't know. If they have these streaming platforms, they have to fill them with something. And if you look at Netflix, Netflix isn't all $200 million Martin Scorsese films. You know, there's an awful lot of stuff.
Right.
You know, I mean, take the average rom-com, most of which aren't very good, but then you see something like Always Be My Maybe, you know, which was really funny. And with, Randall Park and Ali Wong. And I mean, that's, you know, that actually reminded me. It's like, my God, movies, just, you know, it wasn't, the time was, you didn't have to go through seven lousy romantic comedies to find a good one, you know. And here was, you know, Netflix is playing all kinds of different games at once, you know. And I think as long as you have a platform that requires stuff to watch, it's going to behoove the studios and the companies that finance all these movies to remember that, you know what, a small budget or a medium budget success, you know, may not compete with Marvel, but it's gonna, you know, appease the stockholders enough and sustain itself. And that's why I always love a story like when Parasite from South Korea wins.
I was just thinking
about
that.
And not just the awards. Don't care about the awards. That film made a hell of a lot of millions of dollars around the world.
And it was great.
You know,
it was so good.
And it's great. And you know, people were like, all right, I'll try it. And then I don't really know anybody who thought, well, it wasn't very good. Actually, they think, wow, I really didn't know where that one was going. And, you know, a really weird, twisty, funny, scary. I mean, it had basically everything going on. That's the kind of success I like to see. Just like you like to see, I don't know, a film like Hidden Figures, for example. Yeah. Remember Hidden Figures?
Oh, yeah. That's
It took years for that thing to get financed. Oh, no one's going to support a black story about the, you know, about the people behind the space race and blah, blah, blah. You know, the usual kind of, you know, difficulties getting, a black story and a black project financed. Well, comes out, and what do you know? It's a huge crossover hit every which way. Makes tens and tens and tens of millions of dollars. And those are lessons that we should all remember.
Yeah.
You know, support it, and then they'll make more.
A little more with Tribune film critic Michael Phillips next here on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala back with you. We're chatting with Tribune film critic Michael Phillips. This summer, we might talk about this summer 10 years from now, because we're going to see if the studios that are doing this simultaneous thing are going to say, oh my God, we threw away so much money by doing that. We can't do that anymore. And I'm also wondering, this is going to sound crazy, if Friends may save movie making. Because I think HBO Max saw, wait a minute, we don't have to put Wonder Woman on. We put those six knuckleheads back together. Suddenly everybody, who else can we put back together? And maybe that becomes, you know, how they get people to sign up for the thing instead of blowing the $250 million or more they maybe would have made on Wonder Woman had they waited and just released it in the theater.
Matt, 10 years from now, when they put us on for a reunion and it just kills, you know, they're gonna remember this lesson, and they're going to remember this particular broadcast.
Boy, that's going to be rough if that's what they've gotten down to get subscribers. No, Matt and Michael, remember? They used to once in a while on the weekends, late night? Yeah, let's get them back together. Hey, what do you think about, all right, real quick. What else are you looking forward to? What can we get excited about? James Bond's finally going to come out at some point. Is there anything, is there a big Marvel movie? You said Fast and Furious, but there's no Star Wars really even on the horizon right now. Marvel.
Well, yeah, okay, right.
Black Widow.
A couple of things I'm psyched about. Long term, one of the Star Wars pictures coming up is going to be written by Michael Waldron, I believe, who is the guy who's behind this spin-off series on Disney Plus, Loki. And I've only seen two episodes of Loki, and I tell you, it's really good, and mainly kind of reminds you that, you know, when you have a really clever actor like Tom Hiddleston in there, just you're really getting all the right kind of laughs and chills in a performance. Really good. So, you know, that made me think that script to the next Star Wars, which is, I don't know how many years, maybe two, 3 years down the line, you know, really might have something. I'm eager to see the next Marvel film or one of the next ones, The Eternals, just because it's from the director of Nomadland and a film I just adored, which nobody saw yet, The Rider, wonderful film, probably the greatest Western of the 21st century. And this is a very nervy directorial assignment for this woman who's directed a couple of amazing films of these small rural setting. Suddenly she's got a Marvel movie. Let's see what she does with it. So, you know, there's always, I love being surprised. I always look to be surprised at the movies, even in movies where I'm going because I kind of think I know what I'm going to get. And, you know, I hope that's what keeps us all coming back.
I know that this isn't going to mean much to all of our Chicago listeners, but I lived in Los Angeles for a couple of years back out of college, so I went to the Cinerama Dome, and that's shut down right now. And do you think we're going to lose a lot of things like that? I'm imagining somebody's going to scoop that up. It's too iconic. You can make money on that. But are you worried about some of the houses, or do you think those places are so entrenched it's more the suburban movie theaters and places like that that might face more troubles down the road?
I do, but you know, for every example you're talking about, Music Box Theater in Lakeview, the Lake Theater owned by Classic Cinemas, which is a really great locally owned chain here. Chris Johnson also owns the Tivoli in Downers Grove. You know, these are movie palaces from the old days that, you know, were bought by the right people, and they're maintained, and the upkeep is good. But for every, you know, one of those, there's a couple more, you know, within this 40-mile radius here of Chicago and environs, where you have examples of theaters that didn't make it, that are just sitting there. And, you know, it costs more and more money to restore them, potentially, and help revitalize different neighborhoods if they just sit there. So, you know, you have to be aware of the potential neighborhood value of these movie theaters, I think. Because once they come back, you know, you go out to the Glen Arts in Glen Ellen. I mean, that's a great part of that downtown area. It's the Tivoli is a great part of downtown Downers Grove. It's all very important to me. And I guess I'm just a sucker for that kind of big old house, big screen, you know, less keen on, an 18-plex where the biggest theater is 160, maybe 220 seats. Do you know what I mean? That's how I grew up in the 70s, going to movies. It wasn't like I was some sort of snob waiting to see first-run stuff up in the big theaters in Milwaukee and Chicago. I was in Racine, and, you know, those big old theaters were gone. I was at the multiplexes like everybody else, but on the other hand, I was seeing stuff like Jaws and Close Encounters, and you know, not the worst time to grow up.
The only thing I will say in defense of those theaters is, so I live out west, and in Barrington they have the Barrington 24. It used to be the Barrington 30, that kind of condensed or enlarged or something. So now it's, I think, the Barrington 24. And the one good part about that is, with that many screens, they're serving a more diverse community out there. They've got Bollywood films and all sorts of different stuff out there. And that's kind of cool that that's available, because otherwise probably
absolutely
wouldn't.
Absolutely. No, right. That's exactly right. Exactly right. That's a very good point. And that kind of diversification of what you're actually seeing on these 21 or 18 screens, you know, that's a relatively new phenomenon in the last decade, for sure.
Yeah. And not eight screens of Baby's Day Out or something like that, right?
Yeah, exactly. No, it's good. That's great. And of course, you know, why would you not try to cater to as broad an audience and as many different audiences as possible? You know, and then, you know, do what everybody should do with the movies is, you know, now and then just take a chance. It's like the film festival concept, you know. Yeah. I always made sure that no matter which film festival I went to, the Chicago one, you know, Venice, Cannes, Berlin, you name it, you always take, you know, at least one chance every couple of days on something you know nothing about. You know, maybe it's shot in a language you've actually literally never seen subtitled before. Whatever. And you just don't know what you're going to get until you give it a shot. And I think people are doing that with the streaming concept too, Matt. I think people do kind of endlessly go through their Netflix queue and think, well, there's all this stuff that the algorithm is recommending, but yeah, maybe I'll just go over here and check out,
take a chance. Yeah.
You know, for example, that streaming series, Lupin, the French heist series, which turned out to be a huge success. And, you know, I think if the pandemic's taught us anything, is that the heist movie is the one thing that seems to be pandemic proof, you know.
Yeah, really. All right, so we'll let you go, but Quiet Place 2, you seem to give a nod to, at the very least. In the Heights, you seem to be very supportive of. Is there anything else? If somebody wants to head into the city, find one of those hidden gems that you're not going to find anywhere, is there something else out there that people should look for?
I mean, always keep an eye on the Music Box schedule. They're the ones that's the theater that reopened cautiously the earliest, and they have two screens, and I would just really suggest to people that they keep an eye on what's coming there, because that's a wonderful place if you haven't gone. It's my kind of atmosphere, and they got a really great lounge next door. You can get a beer. The owner of the theater also owns a vineyard in Michigan and has, you know, like, actually really tasty wine. And I don't know. That's where my heart's at. I found that out, you know, just as a civilian in COVID, once it was safe and I'm vaccinated up, that's the first place I went. So, look, I hope the Bond movie is really good.
Yeah.
You know, I do. And I hope it's a great big screen experience. And I am looking forward to a lot of the returns of those franchises that I did like. The Mission Impossible movies, for example, you know. Now I'm really in the mood for one. And they've actually been really pretty strong.
They have been
the
really good. Whatever you may think. And you know what? So here's what I'm excited for, Michael. I hope to God this is good. I'm getting jazzed for the Top Gun movie.
Yeah.
Well,
you know,
you don't think so?
Me too, kind of.
Okay.
You know, it's another one, but it is funny now. I mean, that movie, like A Quiet Place 2 and everything, I mean, it's been in the can for a couple of years now, right?
Yeah.
And, I feel that as long as it's safe to go back to the movies, I'm newly, and fully supportive of anything that gets people back in.
Michael, it's like you've been reborn. You've been, you know
reborn,
what I mean? Like,
exactly.
All of you guys that have to sit and see everything, you develop kind of a harder edge crust, right? Because I'm happy you're all excited to go see a movie. I saw 40 this week and 34 of them were really bad, but it was my job. So I imagine you develop this kind of like thick skin where you're like, yeah, you're not going to impress me. And now you're like, you know what? Mission Impossible? Hell yeah. Let's go. It's going to be awful,
yeah.
But I'm okay with that. It's been a year since I've had to see something really bad in a theater with a bunch of people. Let's do it.
Okay, now if I actually went back and said, you know what, I really love the Saw franchise, then you'd know I had that the pandemic had actually done something to my standards.
Michael's like, but this Conjuring is really fresh. I think it's good. Yes, they found it. The Purge, more Purge.
You know what though? All right. I lay off on the Conjuring. I haven't seen the new one, but the first Conjuring, really good, really good.
But you were like 20 then, was it? I mean, they're
got
more,
like to,
more of
like
those
to remember,
than Fast and Furious.
I like to relive my youth. It's been a while.
Michael Phillips in your Chicago Tribune. Find him at chicagotribune.com. Spend a couple bucks. Pick it up yourself. Hold it in your hand. It's a lot of fun to do it that way still. Michael, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Matt. Appreciate it.
Stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom next, right here on 720 WGN.